I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
You don't think that it's time that somebody cared enough to have a dream?
Why are you getting so upset? This is not about you.
Yes, it is. You are a human affront to all women, and I am a woman.
At some point, you gotta decide for yourself who you are. Can't let nobody make that decision for you.
How do you go about getting an exorcism?
I beg your pardon?
Hi, this is Mark Kermode. Thanks for downloading this Kermode on Film podcast. I am here at the BFI South Bank, and I'm delighted to be joined, after many years of admiring her work, by the great Debbie Tucker Green. Debbie, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Mark.
We're here because your new film, Ear for Eye, is premiering here at the London Film Festival a week on Saturday, and you've got a simultaneous premiere that it's playing here, and it's also playing on BBC Two at the same time. So this is terrifically exciting. Firstly, I have to say to you that I've been a huge admirer of your work ever since Second Coming came out. I reviewed it in The Observer, and I had a massive battle with the editors at The Observer for the right to use your name in lower caps, which I lost.
Wow.
They insisted. they said no, if the surname has to be in upper caps. So Debbie Tucker Green, all that. Let's start by doing that. Why all lowercase?
You know, it's not like a big deal in as much as like a huge reason, but it's just the kind of, with storytelling, for me, it's, as opposed to having, here's the title of the thing and here's who it is and there's a separation and then there's, it's, for me, it's just very much, it's a storytelling. This is the story, this is the person, and this is the ensemble. Do you know what I mean? So it's like very simple in my mind, but obviously causes wars in other rooms.
It drove me nuts, but not least because I thought she might read this and go, this idiot doesn't even know obviously having a stupid name like I have, I'm very concerned about getting people's names right. I was so mithered when they put capital letters on it.
It's strange how people have fights about that when there's bigger things to have fights about, you know?
So tell us about Ear for Eye, which began life as a stage production.
For sure. It was a play, I think in 2018, we did it. And generally, I don't, you know, sort of look at my plays and think, I must make a film of it or anything like that. So it was done and dusted. It had quite a big cast. It was quite a big effort to get it on and get it on, you know, how you want it. And then, you know, life carries on and I'm kind of, you know, working on other stuff. But it kind of, something was knocking at the back of my head about it. And potentially another way to tell, for it to have another life in a different genre. And it's not something I love to, you know, sometimes plays are plays, films are films, and are written very, very different. And genres do very different things. So, but it didn't leave me. And so I'd said to Fiona Lamptey, the producer, I said, you know, this is still rattling in my head a little bit. And I think there's a way that's, what's coming is something that's absolutely film. And she said, fine, you know, go away and write it, basically. So I was like, all right, cool. That's how it started, just rethinking it totally for film.
So how would you describe, so obviously I haven't seen the play,
You don't need to see the play. Mm-hmm.
The film is, it's like a discussion between the past and the present about various forms of experience and resistance that we see done as performed word, spoken word, dance, loads and loads of kind of very physical. And I love the film, and I don't know the play at all. And I was watching it thinking, I can see how some of that would have worked on stage, but not all of it. So, firstly, how would you describe the piece?
Listen, Mark, I don't even know, because it's... first of all, I'd say it's a film, and I'm glad, in a way, it's good that you haven't seen the play, because it's got to stand up as a film on its own merits. And if you... You know, it's kind of funny, some of the language, whenever we're asked to, you know, write copy for it, me and Fiona were like, well, we just don't know how to describe, you know, it's... So if it sounds quite dry how it's been described in the past, because we've been like, we don't know, you know, even know how to quite say what it is. But I think there's something, what I was trying to do with it as a film, there's a simplicity in its storytelling. So you have different generations, and it's almost like snapshots of domestic lives, and sometimes it's in some of it's domestic, some of it's not. But what I wanted visually was, you know, what I said to DP and to the designer is there's a version that could be very much, I don't want to know how much to say before people see the film, very much box sets, very much naturalism, you know what I mean, all that kind of thing, right? So, and we could have done it, COVID or no COVID, we could have done that. But for me, it wasn't that. You get into the conversation, and rightly so, of if we're in a kitchen and we're in Brooklyn or London, you know, of course, what's the decor? What's it painted like? How old is it? Where are we? Which is absolutely the correct questions. My thing was with this, what I wanted to do was strip that back visually. You have all that information that you'd be getting it from the cast, how they speak, how they interact, what their depth of field from their visuals to each other. Yeah. If we put them on a soundstage or we put them in a whatever size, you should know what they're acting within, because they know as cast, we've rehearsed it, and they know literally the geography of the room.
Yeah, yeah.
And so for me, it was always visually, I don't say stripped, but visually doing something slightly different. But it's still quite naturalistic. Some of the conversations are quite naturalistic, even if, you know, occasionally you play with language and stuff like that. So my thing was, you should be able to get the information from what those cast members and what's happening,
yeah,
and what's
yeah.
being said. And also, we can zip around. Of course, you know, you work with a cut with the films, you can zip around anyway. But it's it was always, in my mind, visually doing something not 100% naturalistic. But we can play with time. We can play with feel, tone, vibes, and all that kind of thing. So that's where, as a film, it started to get exciting and interesting for me. But it's actually quite, you know, I kept saying to Lucci, the DOP, and to Chris, the designer, you know, it's simple, but to try and make it look simple is harder than doing, what I'm saying? So yeah. There was a load of conversations around, all right, so then what do we do with, you know, light is super important, of course, but the specificity of, you know, time of day, season, where's the sun, what direction, where are we, what left, East Coast, West Coast, London, out of it, gentlemen, all of that suddenly became really kind of crucial to the time frame and the feel and the tone of each different kind of, yeah.
Them is still taking liberty, still taking mine. We still having to have the damn talk.
I am absolutely serious about this. So.
It's like that phrase about, you know, it takes a lot of practice to appear this unrehearsed.
Yeah.
For anything to appear like it's free-flowing.
Yeah.
The other thing that gives you that impression is because the piece does break into dance. Now, I've said this before about dance. I know nothing about dance, but I love it. I find it almost impossible to talk about why I love it, because I don't know how to explain what it is doing. And my daughter, incidentally, is a dancer, and it just drives her nuts. Can you say something about the role of dance in the piece?
Yeah, there's sort of like the pre-existing clips that are really in there.
Yeah.
So that stuff was... What was interesting was about protest and how people use bodies differently for protest. So... You know, some people will march, some people might not march, some people may be at the front, some people might just want to dawdle at the back, some people may dance. So it's all sort of interesting looking at how people place their bodies with protest, and also on top of that, how people may judge it or, you know, have different values of, well, what's that? What are you doing? You know, so where there's some footage, pre-existing footage that we put in, which was, you know, legit, people were protesting with their bodies, it was just a different expression of how people were gathering and how people were using themselves.
But that's then echoed in the physicality of the performances, because all the performances of all your cast, and it's a brilliant cast, you say naturalistic, but they are choreographed performances. They are telling you the story as much with the way they stand or the way they move than what they say.
Yeah, for sure. And a part of that was we had, you know, what I'd asked with the producers and kind of insisted on was that we have rehearsals. ahead of shooting. So we had 2 weeks, not 2 weeks with all the cast, but like everyone was in for a few days, all the cast were in for a few days. And so what they know and what they, you know, when they were, you know, auditioning or having, you know, this was given as you're going to have to be in more than you think.
Yeah.
Because it's, you know, sort of all the homework of who are you, where are you? If you're a family unit, let's get to the shortcuts, which is body language. And so that just builds backstory before we even hit the set.
Yeah,
so you've got those sort of 3 days with the cast or a little bit longer with the sun, and it's absolutely building up those kind of backstories and just relationships and people being in a room together, you know. And also this was peak, I mean, we're still in peak COVID, but it was peak COVID, do you know what I mean? Just suddenly being in rooms with each other. And, you know, how long have you been married? Who proposed? Where did you meet? Yeah. All that kind of thing, where none of that's kind of spoken of, but it changes how you interact with people non-verbally.
Yeah.
And when you have that, you know, is that an only child, or have you got, is there another couple of siblings in the house, or is this a snatch moment, or is this a first time conversation? You know, it changes and informs people's physicality. And that, to me, particularly because we stripped a load of other visual clues, that had to be 100% rooted in what the cast know and knew what they were doing. So,
one of the things that's going on all the way through is this conversation between the past and the present about generational struggles, about what people now think they know and what people then. Now, my only sort of, you know, point of entry to this is, you know, you and I from very different backgrounds. When I was in Manchester, I was in a lot of, you know, political campaigns, and so I have some knowledge of, you know, marching, and I have some knowledge of being on the other end of a conversation when somebody says, you people don't know what on earth you're talking about. You weren't there when we did the thing. And I found myself doing the same thing. You weren't there in the Thatcher years. Yeah. How dare you? Can you say something about the way in which that conversation manifests itself? Because it's very fluid in Ear for Eye, and yet it's sometimes becomes quite frantic.
So it's kind of, so we've got different generations, you've got parents, you've got kids, you've got elders, and it starts to, I can say, slip and slides a little bit. One of the older characters, I think if I can remember rightly, even the tenses slip and slide and change, you know, was, is,
yeah,
and all that kind of thing. And visually, it plays with time and seasons and things, do you know what I mean? So so there's stuff that's kind of, how can I put it? There's stuff that's kind of thrown up, the cards are kind of thrown up in the air, and you see, you know, some of the younger ones' energies. And it's not that people are criticizing necessarily their energy, but there's also kind of...
But they are.
You know? I don't know, they're just kind of like, you know. So it's, there's stuff there that, you know, audience can take from it what they want. So that's kind of, you know, and then you have, like, okay, what's your physicality when you're even protesting? Or even if you don't protest, that's, you know, how valid is that? You do other things. And the frustrations and, you know, and then folks kind of potentially tired of the repetition or how much movement has been made. So, you know, for me, it's kind of thrown up in the air and see, you know, with some characters it lands, some characters it stays up in the air, and it's for the audience to then, you know, take from it what they want.
When they told me to stop speaking, so I stopped speaking, and the second of the six who had cuffed me smiled, saying my silence could be used against me in a court of law. When they challenged me to say something, I said nothing. When they provoked me to say something, I said nothing. When they mocked me to speak, provoking me to get a reaction, I said nothing. They in my face said nothing, I said nothing. They daring me to say anything, to do something, to do anything. And when I still say my nothing, they challenged me, agitating me, goading me, taunting me, mocking me, saying my nothing. And when I didn't react to anything, they baiting me to do something, say something, say anything. And when I did react, they said I was resisting arrest.
You talk about this with great joy and enthusiasm. What are you like as a director? What are you like on set?
So Ellen, your friend.
Yeah. Ellen Lee Jones, co-presenter of a fabulous new Radio 4 programme, coming to your radios very soon. That's all right for me to put that in, isn't it? It's my show, I can do whatever I want. Yeah, okay, fine.
Yeah, she asked me the same question.
And I'm sorry.
No, I'm going to give you the same answer. I would say you have to ask somebody who I'm working with. I think, you know, I'm all right. You know what I mean? It's kind of, you know, it's kind of... you know, whether it's auditions or talking to folks about what it is. With this one, was interesting because visually, I'm having to speak more to folks to try and get them to just kind of see what I see. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah,
I mean, we had, you know, the technical stuff, we had previews and all that kind of thing. But by that point, you know, people have signed a contract, they're on board, do you know what I mean? But it's kind of, you know, speaking to folks and just say, you know, in this, you know, we know what film can do, naturalistically and that kind of thing, but also, I would repeat the same thing in a bigger thing, we know what film can do, right? Yeah. Do you know what I mean? So. Yeah.
Which, for the listeners, you just did whilst putting your arms out to the side to explain the larger size.
Yeah,
yes.
You know, so just sort of talking folks through that, and but you know, and also the script itself. So, how am I as a director? Hopefully, I'm all right. But it is, you know, and also putting the work in, and then saying to the cast and the crew, you know, this is going to be. Cast, you're going to be busier than you think, because you might read and think, I've got, I don't know, 6, 7, 8, 10 pages. But within those pages, you know, if there's overlapping dialogue, you're going to have to learn it.
Yeah.
Because yes, we can edit it, yes, we can overlap in post and all that kind of thing. But there's something about the rhythm and the beauty of people interrupting each other. But it's very, very, very precise.
Yes.
But then to learn it so it doesn't sound like you've learned a precision kind of exercise, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Takes a lot, because then they've got to relax into it, and then they've got to feel it, and then it's got to be, this is exactly the point where you start to overlap. So, you know, talk to the guys, and sometimes people were kind of like, yeah, I get it, you know. Well, most of the time, you know, people get it, and that's, so it has an energy. And even if folks are kind of like, you know, we've just dropped the trailer, and I forgot, it's the first time the cast have seen anything, you know.
Oh, they haven't seen the film?
They hadn't seen the film.
Wow.
Before the trailer dropped. So, you know, so people were like, buzzing up and just like, yeah, we thought we knew, you know, kind of thing. So that's been really.
But you see,
really
I think that's, I think that shows a great deal of trust. I mean, I have no idea. I'm not an actor, but yeah. I imagine if I was an actor in something, I would be like, show me. I need to see everything. Yeah. I need to see what do I look like. Yeah. What's it, you know, how does it look? And that idea of the first thing you see is the trailer.
Yeah.
That's really quite scary.
Yeah, you know, and I suddenly, you know, it's a real realization, a remembering of, okay, yeah, they hadn't seen. And also partly with COVID, you know, we couldn't really have sort of gatherings of folks even coming into the edit and stuff like that. So that was kind of interesting. And, you know, but nuts and bolts are, here's a piece, you know, we'll audition and see if you're the right person for the part. And anyway, we're just getting the words out, I mean, and the character stuff. But people seem to get it. And also it comes down to, you know, some quite simple stuff of, like I say, mum, dad, kid, or, you know, you'll be talking to this group of people here. This is, you know what I mean? So it's actually the kind of, again, I think it's still storytelling. It's just explaining maybe more about the visuals that are less naturalistic than others.
Mm-hmm. How did the Barbara Broccoli thing come about? Because, I mean, obviously, we are talking in the wake of the Bond movie opening. Lashana Lynch is in the movie,
she
and
is.
Barbara Broccoli's name is on the movie. You're going, okay, so how did that happen?
How did that happen? Yeah, so Barbara is one of our execs, and I have to shout out to the other execs as well, because Barbara's getting her name is out there. So we've got also Rose Garnett and Fahana Buna from BFI. So Barbara for the play, there's a section of the film that was in the play.
Yeah.
And it was shot as a film. So at the time when I was speaking to the theatre, I was like, look, there is a version you can do, and genuinely, no shade, you can do it with an iPhone, and because it's, however, this version is a film, it's a short film. So with all the heavy lifting of a short film, which is pretty much similar as a feature, do you know what I mean? It's a separate unit, it's a separate producer, it's separate what have you. And at that stage, you know, sort of like conversation with people, and one of the first names that I had was Barbara, and we'd sort of crossed paths slightly before.
Yeah.
Just kind of seeing, kind of, you know, her, she's kind of, I don't want to speak for Barbara at all, but.
Oh, go ahead, speak for a Bond producer. I think it's really impressive.
No, you know, what I was looking for, was somebody who would, who can think slightly out of the box. She got it from the get-go. So Fiona Lamptey also produced, because Fiona was producing short films at that point with Fruit Tree Media. And I was like, well, this is a short film. It's going to end up in a, you know, a play, but it is a short film.
Yeah.
So Fiona came on board and Barbara came on board at that point. So when I was talking to Fiona, first of all, about trying to do, you know, a film version, it was from, again, Fiona was the first person I went to, and the second name that I was like, Barbara, you know, and there's no guarantee that she'd be interested, do you know what I mean? But just because, yeah, she kind of got it. So that's yeah.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
For a project like this, I mean, I know this, I don't want to over-egg this, yeah, but for a project like this, to have Barbara Broccoli's name attached and to have LaShawn Lynch, who is on everybody's screen, like literally, if we look over there, there is the BFI IMAX, in which she'll be on three times a day, 40 foot high.
For sure.
Does that help people coming to see Ear for Eye?
Does that help them?
I mean, will it draw an audience that it might not have got otherwise?
I suppose, you know, potentially won't hurt. Obviously, it's a very different kind of film. I mean, what's interesting with someone like Shana as well, just we'll come back to your question,
yes, because,
you know, what's great is she's put the hours in. Do you know what I mean? As, you know, she's done theatre, she's worked away, and she's a grafter. So when we were doing this, just coming back to that whole sort of language thing, and people having to learn little, you know, chunks and stuff, her and Dimitri learned the whole thing. You know, and I was saying, you don't have to learn it all, because it's just those moments that are really kind of busy. And they were in, and we were grafting, they were in. And I was like coming in, looking for, you know, a little office to do some work as we were shooting. And obviously everything was really COVID kind of secure, so we would know who's in the facility and all that kind of thing. And he'd open the door, and there's LaShana and Dimitri just drilling lines. And it became a little bit of a running joke. But actually what it did do was pretty much what you see is off book. They could just turn it out. And what you get, so then there's a flow of this kind of interruptions and ebbs and the flows and the kind of energy around it. So, no, what's great. I mean, LaShana said, you know, she was doing, in between the play and this, you know, she'd done some films. And even when we were doing the play, she was coming back from the States. And I think she did some Marvel. And, you know, it's great watching her career for a start.
Yeah.
And the overlap of, I think LaShana's spoken of it, of you know, she did EFI, Barbara was attached to that, you know, Barbara seeing her on the EFI, and then, you know, one kind of blew up. It's fantastic. You know, from my point of view, and like I say, you know, like we just said off mic, she's holding her own in those massive franchises, do you know what I mean? So for me, it's like, do your thing, and it's great. And, you know, will it help the film or not? I'm not an idiot, but at the same time, I kind of don't really think in them terms, because one or two very different films. Obviously, you know, somebody might be like, oh, that's the woman that was in Bond and she's in this. But my thing is, you know, the film has to stand on its own.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Two armed teenagers shooting unarmed teenagers at their same
one
school.
One really was depressed, probably clinical. Actually, he wrote a manifesto.
And the other?
You know, I think...
was a bit sad, was he? Drew a picture of intent on a Post-it.
I'm really starting
I'm,
to
you know,
think.
Really, I'm just trying
starting to...
Starting
to think
that I'm just...
I don't know why
I'm
why
just
you why make, you're not taking this seriously.
I'm taking this as
why
seriously
you're
as
even it. Here. Why are you here?
I am absolutely serious about this, sir.
Do you have good memories of doing Second Coming? I loved Second Coming, and I don't. And I said I'm not a theatre person at all,
yeah,
so I'm afraid I haven't seen your stage work. But I saw Second Coming as a first feature by somebody whose work I didn't know, and
yeah,
I loved that film. I reviewed it in The Observer, and I've talked about it quite a lot.
Thank you.
On, you know, we did a programme, Secrets of Cinema, which I went on about. Do you have good memories of it?
Yeah, you know, it's funny because I don't normally, even this morning, I thought, let me just watch some of The Second Coming, because in case I'm asked about it, because I haven't seen it for years. It stands up. So I do. As filmmaking is hard work, but yeah, it was kind of like, again, I remember saying about that, it was like, I thought it was very simple, the premise. And there's, all sorts of people are kind of like chin scratching. But yeah, it was good.
Okay,
memories.
So tell me.
I'm not going to tell you.
No, I'm going to ask you this. Since we're speaking honestly, so I wrote a review of it. Did you read the review that I wrote?
I generally can't remember because I don't look for reviews. Okay. I get pushed reviews for films.
Okay.
So go on.
That's fine. No. I was going to say, the fact that you don't remember, I was going to say, was I guilty of chin stroking?
What did you say?
I said I really liked it. I said I thought it was really great.
That's all right.
I thought it was really...
But people were chin stroking at the end. Do you know what I mean? And like, which is fine. Do you know what I mean? So
well, yeah, but,
I can't remember what you said.
What I said, well, I've said a number of things about it. But one of the things I said was what I loved was that it's ambiguous all the way through.
Yeah.
And that's the point about it, is that I love the I love the fact that you can read it as a completely straightforward story about a woman who is pregnant and comes to believe, or maybe that she is pregnant because she is pregnant with the second coming, or maybe that's not true, maybe she's fallen out with her husband, we never know. And the point is, you don't need to know. And the ending has a sort of wonderfully sort of epiphany-like quality to it, if you want it to. Or it's just a nice flourish. That's what I said.
That's cool.
Was that right?
That's cool.
Thank you. So you don't sit at home stewing over your reviews?
No.
Do you read reviews generally?
Generally, no.
Why not?
It's not the point. So what I was saying to Ellen. It's tricky. It's tricky with film because what I didn't realise was you get pushed, like the production company will push reviews to you, whereas in theatre I can just swerve it. It's not the point. My thing is to, do the work and I'm trying to be as true to the characters and the piece and, you put all the sweat into that and stand by it. So what, it's not like an arrogance, people pay their money to, whether it's, if they want to come and whether it's a play or whether it's a film, I don't take it lightly if people want to come and watch it,
sure.
Right? On top of the ticket, you're paying your Oyster thing to get in, or however much, wherever you're coming in for, your petrol, if you can get petrol, your petrol to get in, whatever. So I don't take it lightly that people are going to come and see the thing. So that to me is audiences first and foremost. That's
okay.
That's for them to, and the reviews, that's, that's the part of the wheel, but it's not my...
okay. No, but that's, I think it's very healthy to avoid them in general. I can't
It's not like I'm not having like a massive thing about it. I just don't, it's not my priority.
I think that is healthy. Part of me thinks, oh, she didn't read me being nice about her work. And part of me is slightly hurt. But then that's because I'm desperately fragile.
I couldn't remember. At the time, it might have been the production company pushing stuff. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. Yeah. But I don't know who, So.
What about awards and things? I mean, Olivier's and that sort of stuff. How much has that changed your career? And for people listening who can't see, you just pulled a face, which was like...
I kind of generally try and keep life simple, and when I'm working, when I'm writing, or whether it's directing, it's really trying to keep it just about, like I say, being honest with these characters that are running in my head. And if it's going to be produced, fantastic. And then it's, the graft of doing it. So... awards and stuff. I'm not like no shade or not, but that's not the point for me.
Okay. So you don't have your awards like in your house on the wall?
They're not on the wall. They're in the house, but not on the wall.
Where's the Olivier?
Oh, it's in a, so I was doing some, there was some work being done in the house. So the Olivier's, it's kind of in a cupboard thing, but someone came in my house, I'm like, really? And I was like, but I was doing some work, you know what I mean? So it's, at the moment, it's kind of in a cupboard on a, down there somewhere.
Okay.
But it's not the point. Like I said, not disrespecting all, but it's the point is the work, okay.
I have a Sonny Award and it's literally on the shelf in my house. When you go in, it's like the first thing you see when you go in.
It's like your mirror.
It says, I've got an award. Actually, I've got two and they're next door to each other. So just so people know, award-winning journalist. Who wrote a very good review of Second Coming? You haven't read.
No shade.
So, what would you, if you were trying to If you were sort of saying to an audience what they might expect, an audience that hasn't seen the stage show,
you don't obviously have to see the stage show.
Fine. Mm-hmm. So what would they expect from Ear for Eye?
You know what? I would say a slightly different thing. If you want to come,
yep.
Come. Open your mind. Come with an open mind and see what you make of it.
Okay. And are you nervous at all about it?
What people think? Or
about the, you know, because it's a big premiere. Oh, the LFF is a big deal.
Yeah, it's normally, like I said, to off mic, it's at the moment, there's quite a lot of stuff, do you know what I mean? And sort of bits and stuff we're still getting done. The film is done, don't get me wrong, that's done, but this other stuff. So at the moment, it's a little bit of like a head's a bit scrambled. But I'll, you know, when audiences come, do you know what I mean? I do get nervous. So.
Well, I'm sure people will come. As I said, it's a week on Saturday here at the BFI South Bank, and it's simultaneously on BBC Two. And I think my own suspicion is it will be really well received. I thought it was a thrillingly exciting piece. I really, really enjoyed it. And I've actually watched it a couple of times because the first time round, there's a lot in it that I didn't get until the second time round. So I would say it's really nice that people, even if they see it here at the BFI, they will be able to almost go straight home and watch it again, which I think is a really important thing. I kind of closing thing, I had been told in advance that you don't like doing interviews. No. But you've been like, you know, perfectly. What do you not? Do you not like talking about? Because you've just spoken very fluently and eloquently for, you know, however long it is. What do you not like? You could do this for a living.
No,
Debbie.
No. No, I don't like. I just don't like it. And there's nothing personal. I don't really like talking about stuff.
Because the work should speak for itself.
I feel sorry. Yeah, the work is there to speak for itself. You know, and it's hard for like. Yeah, it's kind of, in a simple way, that's kind of it.
Okay. Well, look, it's been a pleasure speaking to you about it. I'm so thrilled to have met you after all these years because I've been a big, big fan ever since Second Coming. Love the new film. I wish you all the success with it.
Thank you.
And, you know, hopefully we can do another interview further on in the future and it will be as much fun as this has been for you. Thanks ever so much, Debbie Tucker Green. Thank you. Well, there we go. That's my conversation with Debbie Tucker Green. You can see the film at the London Film Festival a week on Saturday in the evening. You can also watch it on BBC Two. If you've enjoyed this podcast, remember to subscribe, tell your friends, go to our Patreon page. We've got lots of video extras, all the usual stuff. Stay safe. Keep watching this, guys.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.